We're seeing this sort of regression and backtracking and not even wanting to agree to commitments that were made in 1994 or 1995, when we're actually saying that now we need a new world. So it's frustrating sometimes, shall we say.
This is a podcast called Walk, Talk, Listen. An attempt to connect people and make this world a bit better by sharing opinions and experiences based on the belief that everyone's perspective is true, albeit partial. My name is Maurice Bloem, and I would like to welcome you to yet another episode of Walk, Talk, Listen. Okay, good day, everybody. This is another episode of the podcast Walk, Talk, Listen. And yes, we are still attending the CSW 68, almost done. I think two more episodes to go. And today I'm delighted with a very special guest who is my neighbor at the CCUN, Alison. Please introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm Alison Kelly. And I serve as the representative to the United Nations for ACT Alliance, which is a global alliance of faith and rights-based organizations working in humanitarian assistance and long-term development assistance with a very, very strong focus on advocacy.
Yeah. And Alison, tell the listeners, why is CSW the Commission on the Status of Women so important for the work that you do?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because there's a lot of people that actually say, well, why should anybody engage in New York with the UN at CSW when the real change happens at the local level and in the communities and with the people who are actually doing the work on the ground? Mm-hmm. But as an organization, and particularly as a faith-based organization that really works to promote gender justice, we think that it's also important to bring in the global advocacy dimension, mm-hmm. and particularly to be able to bring those voices from the local communities to the table here, so that not only UN officials, but also all of the government delegates that are sitting here making those decisions, we try to get them to actually listen and hear what those real experiences of people are. So for us, it's an important opportunity really to make our messages clear, but also it's a really, really good opportunity to kind of reinforce the connections and to network and to bring young feminists, to bring young activists together, to network, to strengthen each other, to share good practice, to learn, and just to meet each other, because it's especially in many, many places of the world where there's lots of pushback, which is one of the areas we're most concerned about. But mm-hmm. it's very lonely work. They don't have many allies very often in the local community when you're working on gender justice. Mm.
And what I find really impressive, what I've seen, and actually the listeners have experienced this, you were able, ACT Alliance was able to bring a lot of the partners from all over the globe, both, more senior as well as young. You had even a youth delegation, to introduce them to the event, but also to have them speak at a number of panels. What are you most proud of this, when you look back? Well, one day more to go, but let us look back at the last 2 weeks.
I think I would actually say that it was it's kind of the totality, if you want, that this year we were able to do perhaps much more than we have in previous years. But for me, I was very, very pleased that we were able to have our youth representative, a young woman of faith, to actually be on one of the panels of the UN Women's Youth Forum, speaking about her experiences and her work. So that's a new area for us. We're trying very hard to really bring meaningful inclusion of youth in. So that was a very good opportunity. And she was also asked then to speak on a number of other panels. But I would also say that we were able to actually run a series of events co-sponsored by governments. And we actually had something like 8 or 9 different governments that were actually willing to support the events that we were running, that included governments both from the sort of more usual Nordic countries, who are very progressive in these areas, but also countries like Senegal and, you know, from the global south, that are perhaps newer to this area. So that was another big achievement as well. So,
Great. Let us piggyback a little bit on, you know, engagement with, you know, several countries. When you go actually to the website of CSW, you also see that in trying to describe what is happening, 2024 is labeled as a very significant year election-wise. I think more than 60 countries, already had in the beginning of 2024 or will have later in the year their elections. So you're originally from the UK, right? Is that also an important election year for in your country? And so that's one thing. And the other part is, are you in your work, is ACT Alliance playing a role in trying to encourage participation in the electoral process? And is it important for gender equality?
I will start personally. Obviously, although I'm based in New York, I can't vote in the American elections, but I follow with interest what's happening here. In the UK, we assume that there will be an election later this year, but we're not sure yet. And I think that, you know, in relation to gender, how it plays out in a lot of countries, and this has been a big concern of ours around financing and so on, is where the economy is a major event, and particularly what is prioritized. So in the UK, you see our government, you know, reducing income tax, which is good for people who aren't particularly wealthy, but who are working. But it also means that it reduces the pot available for those that are most vulnerable. So that whole sort of, post-austerity measure is very much a gendered kind of debate. And therefore, the election will be quite important with that. But in relation to, you know, sort of our many of our delegates who are in countries that are facing other elections and so on, I think, you know, that is really something that plays out in different contexts at a national level. And so we do have a number of people that, you know, in different countries where it's safe and where there is a space to do so, who are actually trying to promote more gender responsive kinds of policies where that is possible. But we also have seen the trend, and I think, you know, it looks like it could be quite difficult as well, because we've seen reversals in many countries that have immediately resulted in, more regressive laws in relation to women and to gender rights, but also in the Nordic countries, for example, the decreased funding available for that, just because of ideological perspectives of the new governments.
Okay. CSW every year has a different theme, and this year a theme emphasizes on accelerating gender equality by addressing poverty and enhancing financing with a gender perspective. Can you maybe share one key action or investment you believe is critical for making significant progress in, you know, in your area of focus?
I think for ACT Alliance and for me personally, especially since I'm partially responsible for actually developing ACT's policy in this area, the key is really shaping up to be the whole area of financing. And that's really at all levels. First and foremost, I think we need to see a really root and branch change, reform to the global economic systems, particularly in a way that allows countries from the majority world, the global south, to actually access the resources, their own resources and entitlements. And why that's important is that because if they are being robbed through illicit financial flows and so on of their revenue, they don't have the revenue to actually be able to provide the services that disproportionately impact women, like health, education, social protection, and so on. So that sort of, even though it sounds like it's very macro, that's quite critical. But then secondly, beyond that sort of macro level, we're also very concerned that within countries, there's a need to really look at sort of the actual tax and or the fiscal policies, the budgets that countries are actually enacting. We all know that budgets are a political decision, and you can immediately see what priority is put on women or children by what the budget is, right? Mm-hmm. So we really, really need to see much more progressive budgets and budgets that are gender transformative in promoting women's rights and so on. And then I think the third part of the financing is actually also to do with how development funding from governments, from foundations, and so on is actually spent. And what we really need to see is more and more funding being available to the very locally based, the women's led, the youth led organizations in the communities, not to big consultants or firms or even big, national NGOs or whatever, but really to actually provide the kinds of funding, often very small, but that really sustains that change at that community level. So it's really all three levels of financing that we're seeing as quite critical.
And CSW is not only about panels and people sharing their opinions, it's also a lot about listening and then ultimately agreeing, right? Before we started recording, you told me that those negotiations are going very slow. Can you maybe tell us where you think they are at this moment? And again, one more day to go, so hopefully they will accelerate. But where are they, and what are some of the challenges in getting to a final document that everybody agrees upon?
Yes, I'm sorry to say that this happens kind of every year. Mm-hmm. And that, I think for me, perhaps the most telling thing is actually the UN Secretary General's opening remarks at the very start of CSW was saying, about how unacceptable it was that in today's world, grandmothers were actually fearing that their granddaughters would have less rights than they did. And that's the kind of fight that we see over this text every year and once again is going on. Personally, I find it appalling that there is a block of countries that consistently refuse to allow text that includes the words adolescents or even girls' rights in there. That, language like gender transformative or even women and girls in all their diversity. These are all loaded language, but they're where we see the pushback very, very strongly. And that's again where, and I understand this year as well, also there's some disagreements around the language of migration because many countries don't like any mention of their responsibilities in relation to migration. So we will see. But I think that, you know, the problem that is increasingly being seen is that even if you have this agreed document tomorrow, we will have some sort of agreed text. Again, the Secretary General has noted, in a sense, that some of these texts, how timid they are in relation to human rights or women's rights, particularly as this language needs to carry forward now to September, to the whole new summit of the future that should herald in new thinking on global governance and so on. And so we're seeing this sort of regression and backtracking and not even wanting to agree to commitments that were made in 1994 or 1995, you know, when we're actually saying that now we need a new world. So it's frustrating sometimes, shall we say?
Yeah. Wow. No, that is frustrating. What surprises me, Alison, is that you know, when you look into, you know, the documents and start reading about what we should be discussing during the CSW 68 is things like, you know, reaffirming the importance of several international declarations, conventions, frameworks, you know, highlighting the interconnection between achieving gender equality and the full implementation of the Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action. You know, that happened many years ago, and it's still kind of a very important event, right, in the whole scheme of things. And then the gender responsive implementation of the sustainable development goals that are only at on average at 15%. So so that is really worrisome, right?
Yes, and I think that this is also where, you know, in the wider UN reform processes, there is a very strong call. It's now a specific call to actually say, how do we radically revitalize CSW? And I think that some of the issues that you're talking about are exactly what's at the heart of some of those concerns. And one is that you have the outcome document, but it's not holding governments to account. So we need much greater accountability and sort of reporting on progress to the 12 points of the Beijing platform, to previous agreements, you know, and so on. At the moment, governments can say, yes, we commit, and then nobody, you know, sort of looks at what they do or don't do in relation to the commitments they've made. So I think that there's, I think that this is recognized, and this is really where some of the UN fight, I guess, is going to be over the next couple months.
Yeah, and then, you know, I mean, then, of course, there is a link in terms of, and we discussed it before with the elections. So, you know, listen, I would really encourage the listeners to, if there is an election in your country, to check out what statements are being made by the different political parties. Because this is worrisome if we would go back to, you know, that the younger generation would have less rights, younger, you know, than their grandmothers. Yeah, I was encouraged by all the young folks that I met, and the listeners have, you know, were able to listen to some of them on this podcast. How do you see the role of youth in advancing gender equality in the community? And where do you see hope? Because I've heard, you know, that we are worried, both of us are worried, but where do you still see hope?
I mean, I do see very much hope in the youth, the young activists, but I would also say activists, you know, across the board as well, who are just saying that, no, we refuse to give up. you know, and we have our rights and we are going to push for our rights regardless of the context. And, you know, that for me, one of the privileges of being at CSW and meeting, you know, the sort of 10,000 people that come in is that you get to meet these people who are doing remarkable work, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what we can do in a small way to support them is quite important. But that's where I see very much the hope. I also see some hope, and I think this is controversial, and I certainly don't want to imply more positive than I actually feel. But I do feel that also there are other sectors. You know, there are very small parts within the private sector, social entrepreneurs, for example, and other sectors where they're also really starting to say that, you know, really fundamental reform is needed in many of these things, and actually coming at it in the ways that they can that is different from NGOs or other sectors. So I think that, you know, it goes back to, who was it that said, you know, sort of political rights are never given, they're gained, right? So how do we actually support and build a movement that is actually really going to say that, you know, the economies need to work for us, politics needs to work for us, we're not just feeding the machine in a sense. So
great. Yeah, that's good to hear. And building a movement is also about connecting people, and I try to do that not only through this podcast, connecting you with the listeners, but also connecting my guests with each other. And this is kind of a funny one, because you know the previous guest, and the previous guest always has a question for the next guest. So this is Sakar of, you know, your youth delegate that I mm-hmm. spoke with, and she has a question. She didn't know that she would be asking it to you. So I have a little video here for you, where she, I have to put it in front of the mic, so.
Yes, so my question for the next guest is, what are you most grateful for in your journey in the achieving the gender equality and in your journey in this fight thing? So what is your most grateful for, and what is your advice for the college, I mean, like for the fellow feminists out there? Thank you.
So can I just repeat that? So what am I most grateful for, and what is my advice? I didn't catch the last
for your fellow bit. Feminists.
For fellow feminists. Okay. What am I most grateful for? Well, I guess I'm now of the age where I'm more on the towards the grandmother side, and I'm very grateful that when I was a young woman, you know, and in the 90s, you actually did feel things were moving, and working at that point also for a faith organization who did promote me and stuff, I got a lot of opportunities and actually didn't really feel a lot of sort of gender bias or discrimination for much of my life, until I came to start looking at it and hearing, and, you know, obviously working in overseas development, seeing the experiences of others. So I think I have been privileged. I hope I've made a contribution, but I've been very grateful, again, as I said before, also that it has allowed me just to meet so many amazing and inspiring people who will never be known as celebrities or anything, but whose work is absolutely fundamental. And I feel my life has been very much enriched by that. Mm. The advice for fellow feminists, I mean, there's a lot of things you could say. I think that what I would say, despite, you know, sort of keep going with your work and all of this, I actually think that it's also really to talk to your boys, to engage men in your life, in your family, your friends, or whatever, because actually, to make this movement, if we want, we also need to change masculinities. And that's not going to be done in a confrontational way or whatever. So bringing more men, changing masculinities, changing those narratives, I think, is probably one of the most important things that we can do in our daily life. You know, I'm not now talking about campaigning or work, but just how do we engage with all of those that we engage with daily?
Right. Your question for the next guest.
Ooh. I think what I would ask is goes back to you. Where do you find the hope to keep going, you know, and how do you actually think we can better support each other to keep that hope for building the movement and for achieving gender justice?
Okay, great. Thanks. So we'll pass that on. You know, this particular, these 2 weeks, the episodes are shorter than normally. Because I've done also more frequent. I came up with a couple of rapid fire questions, and I will not ask them all, but I have a couple that I would like to ask you. And so my request is, you know, if I ask one word, you come up with one word. If I ask you to choose between yes and no, you say yes and no. And then at the end, you're allowed to get back to one of them to give more context if you, you know, would like to do so. Are you ready?
Okay.
In one word, what do you think is the biggest barrier to gender equality globally?
The patriarchy.
Yes or no? Can technology significantly accelerate gender equality?
Yes.
Who is one person that has significantly influenced your approach to gender equality?
A woman named Mary Haas, who's no longer with us, but who was, when I was a volunteer, my first job as a volunteer in Gaza, was an amazing Palestinian woman who did amazing work.
Thank you for sharing that. In three words, how do you envision the future of gender equality?
I guess I would say having equal space.
Okay. If you could change one thing about the world today to advance gender equality, what would it be?
I think I would try and ensure that women were equally represented everywhere, in every aspect of work, every organization, you know, just and at the table and making decisions and setting policies.
What message would you send to your future self, let's say 5 years from now, regarding your work in gender equality?
Don't give up.
Okay. Any question you would like to get back to or more clarification?
Well, I suppose it would be the future vision. I have to say a bit more about that, maybe, because I think that it would be a radically transformed society that was, you know, sort of based around very different organizing principles than today. But also that it's not a static thing, right? It's always going to have to change and evolve, but based on things like equal participation, valuing different knowledge, you know, and sort of compromise and respect and all of these kinds of things. So, yeah, that's what I would see as a different and better gender equal society.
Okay. The last question is for most people the most difficult one, for many people the most difficult one. But I always have a question about music as well because I like music. So if I ask you to come up with a piece of music or a song that inspires you or reflects your journey in gender equality, which piece of music or song would that be and why?
Um, It's not a song. I would just say Tina Turner and leave it at that.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I like it a lot. And I have a, have you seen her live?
No, I never saw her live, but she got me through a lot of situations.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Before I thank you for, you know, making time and sharing your knowledge and wisdom with us, is there any question that I did not ask that I should have asked you?
No, it's fine.
Okay. And Alison, if people would like to find out what is ultimately the result of that came out of CSW, where should they go for to find more information and to read about it or become active?
Specifically around, CSW is the event, UN Women, which is the UN agency that is responsible for running this. They will provide an analysis of the outcome document on their website within, I don't know when, but a few days or whatever. I would also say that, you know, there are lots of women's organizations and also the civil society body that organizes around CSW, which is NGO CSW, will probably have a more critical and comprehensive analysis, and they will also post that, but also ACT Alliance and many of the participants, local, national, or whatever, will also be contributing to the debate as it goes on with their own reflections and analysis.
And I talked with Simon, the communication director of ACT Alliance, and he always reminds us that we have to go to actalliance.org. There his stories and the interviews that he made in the past week or so will be available. And I should, of course, remind everybody that I've done this last 2 weeks a number of interviews with participants of CSW, and they, I think, were all very interesting, as well. So if you did not listen to them as well, check it out. Alison, thank you so much for your willingness to talk with me. All the best with one more day to go, right? So, and hopefully you get some rest after that.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for listening to Walk. Talk, listen, please check us out on 100mile.org or follow us on Facebook or Instagram.